Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at AgriGold.com.
From the Orr Agriculture Research Center outside of Griggsville in western Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 14th day of June 2017. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vake. She's at Stuart Peterson. A bit later in the program, we'll be joined by the new president of the Illinois Beef Association. She hails from Hopedale, Illinois. We'll hear from Joni Bucher. And then as we wrap up our time together, we'll discuss the weather forecast, too. That's with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. It all happens right here on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Here the way the numbers finished up in Chicago for this Wednesday afternoon, and these are closes but not settlement prices. July contract at 376 and three quarters, down 4 1/4. September 384 and three quarters, 3 3/4 lower. December corn at 395 and a half, 3 1/2 lower. The March at 404 and a quarter, down 4 cents for the day. And next year's May at 410 and a half, 3 1/2 cents lower. July of 2018 down 4 at $4.15. July soybeans nearby, 3/4 lower at 931 and 3/4. August at 935 and a half, down 3/4. September unchanged at 936 and 3/4. Again, these are closes and not settlements. November beans at 939 and a quarter, up 1/4. And January, 3/4 higher at $9.47. A settlement price for the bean oil at 3209 unchanged. Bean meal at 302.10, that's up 60 cents. Wheat futures, a close. July contract, 441 and 3/4 for the soft red, down 3 1/4. September opinion, 3/4 lower at 457 and a half. And the hard red July, that's the harvest month, at 457 and a half on a settlement price there, up 0.5 cent. July and the spring wheat, a close at $6.23 and a half, down 4 1/2 cents. Live cattle futures in Chicago, June contract, $124.50, settled down the $3 limit. August also off the limit at $117.87 and a half. The feeders in the August at $146.12 and a half, down $3.82 and a half cents.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana, Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities focuses on managing risk in today's complex and sophisticated commodities market. 866-837-9027.
And here's some of the other outside markets and their trade at this hour. July crude oil is down $1.75 a barrel at $44.70. Ethanol futures at $1.54 9 cents, down 1 1/7 cents. Heating oil or diesel fuel at $1.41, that's down 3 7/10. And the wholesale price of gasoline, that's the RBOB, July contract at $1.43 2/10 per gallon, down 6 7/10. Natural gas, 3 3/10 lower at $2.93 3/10. The Dow Jones Industrial Average at 21,346 is up 24 points. The U.S. dollar down 0.3 at 96.64. And gold futures for the day at $1,270.80, $5 higher. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the Urbana-Champaign area tonight. Scattered thunderstorms. A few of those storms will be severe this evening, so be careful out there. A low of 69 degrees. Winds out of the south-southwest at 10 to 15. Chance of rainfall set at 60%. We may get nearly 0.3 inch tonight. Partly sunny tomorrow, a high of 92. Clear to partly cloudy tomorrow night and a low of 69. On Friday, scattered showers again, a high of 93. A 60% chance of rainfall, but maybe only 0.1 inch Friday night. Another 0.04, partially cloudy, a low of 71. And we'll go to a chance of 40% rain on Friday evening. Saturday, another 60% shot of rainfall, maybe 0.1 inch, mostly cloudy skies. We'll have winds out of the south-southwest on Saturday, and we'll go to a high of 88 degrees. It'll be a few clouds in 73 on Saturday.
Since 1985, Stuart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at stuart-peterson.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. We're now joined by Jackie Vank. She's at Stuart Peterson. Hey, thanks for being with us on this Wednesday, Jackie.
Well, you're welcome, Todd. I really enjoy it myself, you know.
Yeah, I do. I do. Hey, look back for me at last week's USDA World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimate. I know it was a fairly quiet report. That's normal for the month of June. Do you have a quick assessment, though?
Yeah, it was definitely a snoozer on the U.S. side. I mean, you know, they made very few changes with the exception of increasing the 17-18 bean carryout to 495 million. On the world side, it was a little more interesting. The corn stocks went up in 16-17, down in 17-18, but beans and wheat were up for both crop years and much higher than what anybody expected. It's primarily because they raised the Brazilian bean crop to 114 million metric tons. And we did get a confirmation on that from CONAB this week, basically because they pushed their number now up to 113.9 million metric tons. Wheat basically came in a lot higher because Russian production was out about 5 million metric tons, and Canadian production was also up. So, you know, as you could see, they traded the report, and then it was kind of gone. And everybody's focus is on acres now, you know, what the acreage report is actually going to say.
Speaking of that, Informa had some numbers earlier this week. What'd you see there?
Well, it was kind of interesting because, you know, their corn number was 90.186. USDA is at 89.996. Beans, 89.36 versus 89.48 on the USDA side. Wheat, 49.9 versus 46.05, extremely close. But the one big deviation is prevented plant. They came in at 3.275 million acres of prevented plant. Last year, we had 1.6. You know, what that says to me, Todd, is that basically they're saying we picked up many more corn acres than what we thought we were going to be having, as well as probably some bean acres. But, you know, because they did not significantly lower corn or bean acres. So it'll be a while before we actually find out what the truth is. But it just says to me that maybe we're not going to see as big a dive in acres on the June report as what maybe people are thinking. We'll all be waiting with bated breath, you know, to see what they say on the 30th.
Hey, speaking of acreage, we are expected to get some rainfall. We'll hear from Drew Lerner a little bit later. He's fairly confident that everybody's going to get something. But we've been really concerned about dryness across a good portion of the growing regions.
Oh, yeah. And when you look at, you know, you looked at the topsoil moisture numbers that came in on the report Monday, you know, basically we saw that the best topsoil in Louisiana, Mississippi, Tennessee, Wisconsin, Kansas, Arkansas, and the five worst actually came in South Dakota, North Dakota, not a big surprise. Michigan, Iowa, Nebraska, you know, so yeah, we weren't in a severe situation last year as we are this year. But, you know, we started getting improved moisture into July and we just continued. So we'll have to see once if we can be that fortunate again this year.
What did you think of the crop ratings on Monday?
Well, I like to keep track of them, you know, to see once where perhaps the best crops are at the moment, at least as far as visually. We know that this is a very subjective type report, but this week, we saw crop ratings anywhere from 78% to 93% good to excellent in Colorado, Kentucky, Minnesota, Nebraska, Pennsylvania, and Tennessee, and then ratings from 44% to 59% good to excellent in Indiana, Missouri, North Dakota, Ohio, and South Dakota. One big thing is Illinois wasn't in those levels anymore. And so, you know, that's kind of a good thing. But it's just a situation where, like they said in the U of I article, in the FarmDoc article, you know, these first crop ratings are just most of the time don't have a lot to do with where we end up with yield. It's going to depend upon whether we get moisture into July. And, you know, who knows? If Drew is pretty confident on moisture coming in, maybe this is the beginning. We'll have to see.
I make note of the states that you listed, and you said Illinois wasn't in those states anymore. Iowa's not either in the top or the bottom either, so I guess they're both in the middling range, and those are the number one and number two states in corn and soybean production. Outside influences, what do you have going on?
Well, I just have to revisit Brazil. You know, I mean, I am never not surprised by what goes on in that country. You know, we had the big scandal about Temer, who is the president, and that he had taken $416 million in bribes. And now they're saying it's likely he's going to stay president, even though, you know, he was involved in all the graft. You know, they've really been doing a lot of investigating. The monies that have been diverted to political campaigns in Brazil was being laundered, they found out now, through shell companies that did not exist except for having accounts in banks in Antigua. So, you know, we're talking billions of dollars. And one of the first companies that have actually been assigned a fine is JBS, which we're all familiar with. And they have the largest fine to date. That's $1.16 billion. So I'm going to talk a little bit more, Todd, about that harvest plan down there. I thought it'd be interesting for our clients to hear what they're up against down there, too. You know, they're just wrestling with that plan. There's $370 billion that's going to be available, you know, in low, well, not what I consider low interest loans, but what they consider low interest loans. And that only meets about 50% of the demand. All those loans have to be paid back in 14 months. And, you know, the rest of the money is going to come from international grain companies, which we've seen in the past. And, you know, that's always been one of the things I'm surprised by this, that Brazil has been trying to get away from, because what happens is they trade beans or they trade corn for inputs, which is a great situation for the grain company because they can charge full price for the inputs. And it's a really tough situation for the farmer if he doesn't get good production. In fact, many years ago, and you know, I can't state that they're still doing this for sure now, but many years ago, there were farmers down there that owed as much as 24 to 30 bushels of their beans just for inputs because they hadn't met their requirements from the year before. And, of course, the rest would come from their own resources or perhaps other resources that may be available. They do have a program for grain storage construction, which is interesting to us, you know, because for so many years they didn't do anything on that. It's only since 14, and that's at $1.6 billion with a 15-year payoff, pretty attractive. And then they have something called Ag Innovation, where there's a $1.26 billion with a cap of $1.1 million per farm. You know, I wonder, I don't know, maybe you're familiar with a program like Ag Innovation here in the U.S., but I'm just not, and so I was going to look it up, but I didn't get a chance. They also have a program for modernization, modernizing tractors, combines, and other equipment, and that's going to actually have $9.2 billion available to farmers with a seven-year payback. Now, the farmers are not happy because of the interest rates. The interest rates are still, they're only 1% less than they were last year, even though interest has dropped significantly, but I think it's a reflection of the situation that the economy is in down in Brazil, and it is not a good economy at all. And so at this point in time, I think they're very fortunate to be getting what they're getting, but, you know, nobody's ever happy, I guess, no matter how you look at it.
Hey, thanks so much. We appreciate talking with you today.
Yep. Thanks, Todd. Have a great day.
Jackie Vakes is with Stuart Peterson. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. This is the Closing Market Report coming to you from the Orr Center. That's the Agriculture Research Center outside of Griggsville in western Illinois that belongs to the U of I. They'll celebrate their 40th anniversary on the second day of August, and I'm capturing some of the history of this facility today. Yesterday, I was at the Illinois Beef Association Summer Conference in Quincy, and I caught up with their brand new president. Joni Bucher is a fourth-generation farmer from Hopedale, Illinois, and the first daughter in her family to join the agricultural operation. I asked her what that means.
I am the oldest daughter. There are seven in my family, five girls, and the first to be owner and operator of their own cattle operation.
How long have you done that?
I started in 2007 full-time, and I say full-time at that. I was a pharmaceutical sales rep. I had a flex-time position, so I worked 3 days a week. So I'd chore at 4 o'clock in the morning and then in the evening when I got home. And in 2012, my company let my entire division go in a buyout situation, and I decided it was time to make the farm pay for itself.
How was that transition, or how has that transition gone?
Not one day do I miss putting on a suit and heels and getting in the car. I miss my customers. I called on the same physicians for about 12 years. And so I miss those people and the staff that I worked with. I miss the clinical side of things. from that perspective, but I put all that energy into the cattle, and boots and jeans are what I'm most comfortable in, and I love being in the barn and love being in the pasture. So although I miss the people, I don't miss the activity of the job.
Are there similarities at all between the two jobs?
My veterinarian would tell you yes, there really are, because they've come to a point now when I call for them to come to the farm, they'll say, what do you think it is? So I've already read the book. I've already spent a lot of time researching, and my dad taught me a long time ago that observation is the key with livestock. You can generally tell when they're going to be sick, just like you can your children. So if you're looking at them, and I walk through my cattle twice a day, so try to be very observant and ward off any problems early on.
Why did you get involved with the Illinois Beef Association?
I actually had a phone call from Jay Iliff. His father, Buzz, will be my vice president. And Jay was an intern with Illinois Beef, and I had known the family quite some time from cattle shows. And they had an open seat. It was in my district, and Jay said, you would be perfect for this. You love cattle, you love the industry, and would you come aboard?
Did it seem like a natural step for you, because you haven't been on the farm, quote, for that long?
Actually, it was very natural for me, because I grew up on the farm, and we had horses, hogs, and cattle. Drove a tractor from a very young age, and so I was very involved. I always missed it when I was away from it. And my job in pharmaceutical, actually, my proceeds from that, my husband paid our household bills, and my proceeds went to buy the farm and the cattle and to get back to the farm and what I love.
So here you are, you're at the helm of your farm, you're at the helm of the Illinois Beef Association. Where do you expect the organization to go under you?
I think that we're going to really reach out to consumers and continue to generate confidence in our product. I think that they need to know that we're doing the right things, and that we have a quality product, and it's very safe and it's very palatable. So focus on the consumer. Without the consumer, we have no market. So that's a primary concern. And then, of course, trade. Trade is on the forefront here. We really need to move this along. We have some great opportunities. And in those opportunities, we'll see producers being able to grow their operations. We'll see jobs being created. And we'll see some economic impact with the financial, dollars being spent right there locally.
Tell me about the consumer first. And I think maybe that's the right way to phrase it, the consumer first. What does that actually mean to you?
Well, the consumer truly grades us. And they listen to what's said in the media, and if we don't correct it or tell the appropriate story about what we're doing, they have no idea. I equate it to rocket science. I know nothing about rocket science, and that's how the consumer, most of them, are with agriculture. They aren't in touch with agriculture. They don't understand it. So all they can do is listen to someone that might not be educated or from the ag sector and really understand it. So we have to tell our own story. We have to be very transparent in what we're doing so that they understand what we do and why we do it.
On that note, tell me about your typical day.
My day starts very early, and it depends on the season. Right now we're breeding cattle and putting embryos in. And so it's very early, 5 a.m., checking heats and making sure. This morning we were up at 3 o'clock to breed cattle before I came here.
Wait just a second, because consumers, those who are listening that are not farmers, are probably going to think, wait, you are doing what? You are putting embryos in, right?
We do put embryos in cattle, and that allows us to take genetics that are superior and create more calves in a year's time than we would the one calf or possibly twins that we would have from a cow. So we take superior genetics and superovulate those cows and create embryos and then put them in cows that might not genetically be as good as we'd hope for, but might be a great disposition.
You haven't gotten to breakfast yet. You get to breakfast, then what happens?
Actually, I usually don't get breakfast, and that's one of my favorite meals of the day. But many times at 3:30 last week, I text my mom and said, could you please get me a baggie of vegetables together or something, just something to munch on. We haven't eaten yet. And so sometimes our days go quite long. We just get in the mix of things. In this heat, you've got to get cattle taken care of so you're not moving them in the heat of the day. One thing leads to another, and if you're hauling cattle in the trailer, you want to do that before it gets too hot. So by the time we get the breeding done, sometimes we just keep working right through lunch, and that may come at 2 or 3 o'clock. But my mom, God bless her, she puts together the biggest spread, puts it in a cooler, and so we all sit around and have a snack and something to drink, and then we get back at it.
Let's talk about the other topic you mentioned, trade, the Trump administration, opening China back up after it closed down, I think, in 2004, if I remember correctly. How important is an export market for the beef industry in the U.S.?
It's very important. When you look at the playing field that we're on currently, we have a 38.5% tariff. And so there are other countries that are signed on to the TPP that are really looking at advantages over us because they have the reduction in tariff currently. So you could see countries that are down to an 8% tariff, and we simply cannot, increase our trade when we've got that barrier. We have countries that are paying, looking at those tariffs and paying the money to have our product, and they want U.S. beef. Japan is a prime example. They want U.S. beef. They have billboards over there that are promoting U.S. beef. I saw a billboard when I was in China or in Japan in the fall, and it was an ear of corn, and it said, "This is U.S. beef." So they appreciate grain-fed beef. They appreciate the quality and what we're doing here. But what we have to do is to be able to increase our market share there. And that's a little bit difficult to do with that tariff. So we're hoping that President Trump, and all indication from Washington when we were there 2 weeks ago, is that he is going to work these bilateral agreements, and those will happen fairly rapidly. We were worried that it was going to take a lot of time, but I think he's going to go to work on that and get those things done. And for all of us, from all commodities as well as manufacturing sectors, this is really important to our economy.
Are there things you're concerned about or that you need to deal with in Illinois proper?
We're very excited to have Director Pruitt on board. I think from an EPA standpoint, we're doing the right things here. We really are. We're good stewards of the environment. We want sustainability as much as anyone. We want to pass our operations on down through the generations. And so we're trying to do everything that we can. But there were 65 regulations that were put into place, EPA regulations, during the Obama administration. That was more than the previous four presidents put together. So I think that speaks volumes that we had some overregulation, and it's time that we roll those things back and we take a look at it logically and what really matters, what really affects our environment, and what maybe was just a frivolous law.
Good luck on your 2 years.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it, Todd.
Joni Bucher is the president of the Illinois Beef Association. We're talking with her here at the Illinois Beef Association's summer conference in Quincy.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, offering financial products and services created specifically for the cooperative's member owners to meet the needs of rural America, including farm real estate and operating loans, crop insurance, point-of-sale financing, and risk management options, helping farm families succeed today and tomorrow.
It's National Strawberry Shortcake Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1834, Cyrus Hall McCormick patented his reaping machine. In 1854, Towned Glover was commissioned as the first U.S. federal entomologist. He was selected as a, quote, expert for collecting statistics and other information on seeds, fruits, and insects in the United States. His first report was printed that same year. In 1884, New York became the first state to pass laws requiring the bearing of utility wires in any incorporated city over 500,000 people. In 1938, Dr. Benjamin Gruskin received a patent for chlorophyll as a therapeutic agent for use in treatment of infection of the bloodstream and for open cuts and wounds. In 1972, the Environmental Protection Agency banned DDT in the U.S. And in 1988, peanut butter sandwiches saved the day. Students in a school were kept in an extra 45 minutes by a 6-foot black bear that had wandered onto the playground. They kept it at bay by tossing out peanut butter sandwiches until the game warden arrived to take the bear away. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at agrigold.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Wednesday afternoon. Drew Lerner is now here. He's at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Drew, thanks for being with us today.
Well, thank you.
Tell me about the weather forecast looking forward.
Well, you know, we're going to see a change towards more frequent shower and thunderstorm activity across parts of the Midwest as we go forward through this next week to week and a half. And this rain is going to be very important, I believe. Because I do think we're going to see some warmer and somewhat drier weather for a little while towards the end of the month and going into early July, perhaps. Don't know that it was necessarily going to be a persistent feature, but, you know, we managed to dry the soil out quite a bit from portions of Iowa, northern Missouri, into the heart of Illinois, even into parts of Indiana over these past few weeks. And the soil is really quite dry on the top soil level, and we do need to see some significant rain. We got a little bit of that in Iowa last night, and we'll see some more scattering across all of this region as we go forward through the next week to week and a half. It'll come in waves, and hopefully we'll see a good enough distribution of rainfall that will moisten up the topsoil and improve crop conditions before we do get under the influence of a high-pressure ridge, which might occur around the first of the month.
Well, you said hopefully. How confident are you?
Well, I am confident that everybody's going to see rain at one time or another. My problem is that I think that it's going to be a little bit erratic and that some counties and parts of counties will not do as well as others. And you spread that over a larger part of the Midwest, and, you know, maybe there's going to be 20 or 25% of the region that may not quite get with the kind of moisture that it really needs to protect crops in case we do get under a ridge of high pressure and endure, you know, a week's worth of hot weather. So we're going to keep a close eye on it. I really feel pretty confident that we're going to see sufficient amounts of relief in the key states of Iowa and Illinois and even northern Missouri before we get under the influence of a high-pressure system. How much rain actually occurs is still up for debate, but everybody will get rain. And I think there's going to be a lot of areas out there that do get a fair amount. But we just have to keep an eye on it because we have not done well with rainfall in the last 2 weeks. And because the nature of these storms coming up is going to be a little erratic, that leaves the door open for at least a few pockets of problems, if nothing else.
What's your assessment of the high-pressure system you've been talking about?
Well, at the moment, it should be a progressive event. It'll begin in the western United States probably towards the latter part of next week and work its way eastward through the plains and into the western Corn Belt as we get into that second weekend of the two-week outlook. Probably more likely it'd be around the 25th, 26th, maybe in that time frame, we'll see the ridge over the plains. And it'll work its way into the western Corn Belt just as we get to the last part of the month, I would think. So maybe the 27th through the 30th, somewhere in that time frame, maybe have a little bit more warmth around, a little less precipitation. It's hard to say, like I said, whether or not this is going to be a persistent feature. My guess is it's not going to be in the north. We'll see disturbances moving over the top of this ridge. But some of the southwestern parts of the Corn Belt and certainly the central and southern plains may endure a more persistent period of warm and dry conditions.
Hey, thanks so much.
All right, have a good day.
You too. Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City, joins us on this edition of the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason.